Chris, just saw a clip of Kingsley getting downfield, man, laying a hit on Brian Cook. Brian Cook didn't go down, but he showed his ability to get down the field. Stuff like that's going to go a long way.
Yes, dude, Tua Matailoa's got incredible athleticism.
He does. He does.
That's the reason why they really want him to get that job, because he is, I think he's got a level of athleticism at that position you just don't find very much from tackles.
Now, they really like Sua Matia. And I'll be honest with you, I saw a Snead clip from practice today. So he was in there at least for today. The NFL possibly making a couple changes, Chris. But first and foremost, Florio found this. Florio obviously gets under a lot of people's skin, including mine. I mean,
he invents storylines.
But one thing he didn't, though, is he looked in the 2,500 pages of the transcript of what the NFL and what they're doing with the lawsuit from the Sunday Ticket trial, and he found something. And Kanthi Yancey, who serves as the NFL's vice president of broadcasting rights, testified at the beginning of 2024 season that both head coaches will be required to give interviews during games. And this was picked up from a few places. It means, you know, on the commercial break or something, they'll be over there talking to Andy Reid or something. You're not going to get anything. First of all, when I see this, Chris, it makes me cringe. First of all, to be honest with you, the halftime interviews of coaches makes me cringe. Whether it's college football or the pros, a lot of times in the NFL, they don't stop and talk. They'll maybe mention a few things, but it's not on camera. And they'll say, hey, I spoke to Andy Reid coming out of the locker room, and he said that blah, blah, blah is going to be fine and come out and play. But this stuff always makes me cringe. It makes me cringe when you see the head coach interviews. They don't want to do them. You don't get any value out of them. So why the NFL would go interview head coaches during timeouts or whatever, it provides no value to me as the viewer. Because really, they're not going to give you anything. They're not going to say anything. They're so guarded. They're so guarded that the offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator still holds the play sheet over their face. Pro athletes are so thinking always that someone's out to get them. It's like baseball. You go out there and guys are talking through their mitts and everything. When they go talk to pitcher and eighth inning, like, no one gives a rat's ass what the White Sox are going to throw to the Royals. Like, no one's copying that signal or cares. But anyway, when I hear the coaches doing interviews, this is stupid, and I can't see the coaches even wanting to do this whatsoever. Imagine Belichick in this deal. He wouldn't have done it.
I don't think, like, I understand, and this is the problem, is like the networks are eating it up, and they're like, oh, great, this is extra.
Pay us money, they want
this
it.
This is extra. We'll pay you extra to get the coaches during, and it's just, it doesn't make any sense. I get it, but, like, we all know that there's going to be nothing that's said almost every time that they do these little in-game interviews.
Any kind of injury to say, well, it's with our training staff.
And it's like,
they'll let you know.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, because we see it all the time. Like, if you watch, you know, we see, like, college football all the time. They'll do those interviews at halftime, and they don't say anything almost ever.
And they're always in a hurry.
Yeah, they're always in a hurry. Couple questions real quick. Get in. Okay, let me run into the locker room. Like, it's just, I understand, like, why these organizations want the access, because it gives you something different that you can't get at the game. But at the same time, it's like, look, I don't need to hear coach speak for 2 minutes at halftime. I don't need to hear any, I'm sure you watch the NBA on ESPN, and they'll do those interviews in between quarters, and the coaches don't ever say a damn thing.
Or like Sunday Night Baseball when they have the managers on and stuff.
Like, what? Yeah, and like, it's really weird with Sunday Night Baseball, because they'll even interview players in the middle of the game. They're like, they're on the field, and they got a mic connected to them, and they're talking during the game, and it's weird. And it's just like, if I were one of those players, I'd be annoyed at having to answer questions while I'm out in the field trying to play defense. Like, that just doesn't make any sense. Like, I understand you want to, you know, market the game more and market the stars more, but you don't need to do it that way. Like,
yeah, these TV interviews always make me cringe,
right?
Because they're just sitting there going, because just waiting for, like,
they're
dumb
never
questions
good. Then. They're never, and there's a lot of dumb questions, and yeah, they're never good, because these players are extensively trained to not say a damn thing to the media.
No, they won't. They're definitely not gonna say anything on TV. Now, local radio and stuff that you get, it's actually a lot better than you get with the television version of it. But I saw this, I was like, man, these coaches aren't going to. And I understand there's a lot of new age coaches that'll probably do it. Like, Sean McVay probably wouldn't care doing it. Like, a guy like Andy Reid's giving you absolutely positively nothing. He'll be nice and cordial, but he's not giving you a damn
thing.
He'll
be very like the Chiefs will be up 21-0 at the half, and he'll be very complimentary of the opponent there because that's just his nature. Like, same thing if like they ever do it where like they start interviewing players like Mahomes or whatnot. Mahomes not going to say a damn thing during these interviews. Like I said, I get that they're trying to increase access, especially because we've seen that in like the UFL and, you know, like the XFL before that, where they were giving a lot more access. We were able to hear the comms where coaches are calling plays into the huddle and stuff like that. So like, yeah, we do have that access, but it's like, I also think there's value in the mystery of what we're watching. I don't, as much as I'd love to, I don't want to hear the coach comms telling us what they're going to do before. Like, I like the mystery of seeing the play of unfold as it's happening. So yeah,
and, they're so secretive of what they do. They're incredibly secretive.
Yeah, they're not going to give you anything. So this is just going to be no value added to it.
I think the second half we're going to come out and run three straight.
Yeah, because like if I were a coach, I would lie. Like, dude, we're going to Hail Mary it. Every drive, we're gonna take a deep shot.
You mean
every
like
drive.
When Mike Leach was at Oklahoma, yeah, and left the play sheet out there in Texas,
right?
Bought it.
Yeah, they bought it. Yeah, I would be lying my ass off all the time in these interviews. Like, it doesn't make any sense why you would go out there and give anything anyways. Like, none of these teams want to give out anything to the media to begin with. I mean, every time Mahomes comes on with CDOT, like, Mahomes gives you the most prepared, the most clear cut, like, nothing controversial ever. That's what he says. Whenever Alex Smith was here and he would talk to media, nothing. I don't get why they feel like this is something they have to have.
There's relatively few players that will give you what you want. Also, the NFL, do you see this the thing about the Hawkeye technology to gain, which is really silly to still have the chain gang like we do in 2024 when you don't have to? But the NFL is looking to replace that. NFL executive Gary Brantley told the AP the league will test Sony because Sony's got the new contract now. Who was doing the headphones? Was it Bose?
I think it was Bose.
But Sony's got it now. Like, Sony's got the deal for all the coaches' headsets.
The coaches' headsets now, yeah.
But Sony has the Hawkeye technology. They're going to test this during preseason games. And this would be where it's actually, you get precise pinpoint of where the football is and if you got the first down or not, which still going to matter on where the ball is spotted, unless all of a sudden things start changing because the ball's not spotted where it should be. But Hawkeye tracking services for the line to gain measurements adds cameras to the stadiums to track players, officials, and the ball. The optimal tracking system notifies officials instantly if a first down was gained after the ball is spotted by hand. I do like that because a lot of times we see these officials pull the ball back and they're going to get in their ear, hey, that's a first down. You know, I'm all for this. I'm all for technology. I'm all for replay. I'm all for doing this. I still think the chain was outdated. Again, this is 2024.
Really? Wait, you thought the chain was outdated?
No, it's fine.
You didn't
like the chain? It's going to still be used for visual reference.
You didn't like the chain? I'll say this, man.
But this is what I want.
Maybe.
This is accurate.
I'm generally a futurist on a lot of things, but I like the chain gang. And it's just because, like,
it'll still be there, but it'll be there just for visual. Just
I don't know, because it's not going to do the same thing as it used to. Like, because to me, it wasn't the actual chain.
It's going to be like AP
poll. Yeah, it's like it wasn't like the chain gang there. Like, the thing that made the chain gang cool was when you get close to a first down and then they go out there and they measure, and then the drama that comes with them when they extend it out and they put it down into the grass and you see if they got the first down, if they're just a few inches short. Like, you remember the time where they inserted like an index card in between the ball, stuff like that.
But you're at the mercy of the official placing the football. It's are you really sure that's where he went down?
But like it's and it looks stupid, but it's dramatic, and that entertainment value is really good. Now, I will say this. If they can find a way to make the presentation dramatic, like they did with with the chain, then I'm cool with it. At that point, you can just take the damn chain out, you know. But I still think that there is at least presentational value.
And I still think they'll keep those there, because that way the quarterback and the players can look and see like how far they have to go.
Yeah.
It's not exact, and you know it's not going to be exact.
Yeah.
But you kind of know when and where you have to go.
I mean, they have already put markers there anyways because they started putting pylons at the first down marker. So, like, we have that reference. But, like, I still like – I think the chain gang, I just think there is, like – there is presentation value in having it just because there's a lot of suspense there. And I think it adds to what makes football a great sport. But yeah, I'm cool with them using like chip technology to make sure that they got it right. I'm perfectly cool with that.
It's why you look at the combine, you know, whenever those get things in the guy's shoulders are, a little thing. They're sensors to track when and where you are. One of the things that they've talked about, and they've secretly been doing it. And I understand why you want to do it, that chip inside the football to tell you exactly when it crosses the goal line. The only problem with that is you still have to know where the knee went down. Like, it's still very important where the knee went down, where that ball actually went.
Yeah, but you could cross-reference that with the data they have.
But that's
the incredibly important
thing, if that ball crosses the goal line or not. Like, I'm 100% for that. But if you went back and said, okay, well, the knee was down. When was the knee down? Where was the actual sensor on the football when the knee went down?
Yeah, that shouldn't be a problem. Like, I don't think that'll be a problem. The interesting thing was, like, how do you make that work for television? And that's going to be something that the NFL and the networks are going to have to work around. Because I do think that, like, football is one of those sports where, like, you know, there's a lot of tension involved in the games, and, you know, each one of those times where it gets really close there, the ball gets close to that marker, that adds to the suspense. And I don't think you want to take too much away from that. But I do think, like, the technology is important. I actually think it's really cool for them to incorporate, like, player positioning technology, because, like, they already have started to do that. You can go online and you can see, like, some plays and how they play out. And
virtual reality is what Jameis was using the offseason.
And so, like, that's really good because it's going to help you watch film better, because you're going to be able to track players. You're going to see their pathways a little bit easier, which, you know, is really cool, because you can kind of see, like, for instance, you know, in the Bills game, they had some plays like that, and I was able to go back and kind of see, like, where the Chiefs were able to take advantage of, like, busted coverage. Like, Travis Kelce's touchdown was busted cover 3. It was really cool seeing that stuff. So I'd like to be able to see that and then cross-reference that with, like, the All-22. But, yeah, I mean, at the same time, like, you got to make it work with the actual presentation of the sport, because that's important too.
I think the number one thing, and we've seen it through baseball, be accurate. Because how many times have you watched baseball? I know that Bill DePlissé.
Because baseball has a lot of times where they are inaccurate.
Well, he's made a big difference and made a name for himself for making good challenges. But a lot of times when you're making challenges, it's still not right, and you can clearly tell it's wrong.
Yeah.
Just make it better. Again, Kevin, full-time officials, and they've already started that process. It's not all of them. But what they're going to do is try this out in the preseason, see how it works. They're still going to have the chain gang as a backup. And, of course, technology can always go out, and then you're going to be relying on the chain gang once again to be the number one, first and foremost thing on the field if it happens. But at least give you a visual reference of where the line is, and not it's not going to be the official, but at least it'll be there. But, hey, I'm all for making things accurate.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I'm all for it. I a lot of people complain. Like, you remember, what was it, like a month or two ago? People were complaining about too much replay in sports, because, like, there was that foul ball home run argument in that Royals game like a month ago. And, you know, like, oh, people were like, we just need to get rid of instant replay because they miss things, which doesn't make any damn sense.
Now, we're in 2024.
That's a terrible take.
When you're a bar liquored up, you can see whether it's a home run or not, right? Like, just make it quicker.
Yeah.
And I think, too, and as far as baseball's concerned, I've always been a fan of just having a crew there that's paid, and that's the only thing they do. Instead, they rotate, you know, crews through New York, and that's where they'll spend, like, a series, because they know all these guys. They're their buddies, man. It's Uno Cero's down there at the Kansas City game. Like, I'm not going to call him out, man. I'm going to make him look good here. Chris, your decision was right. You know, I mean, it's kind of that stuff like that you get.
Yeah, and you know, I think a lot of it is, like, they don't want to undermine their officials. But, like, hey, if you got officials that aren't doing their jobs right and they're making bad calls, then call them out, you know, like, correct the issue. Because at the end of the day, like, the integrity of the sport is more important than saving the face of your officials. So,
no, I'm with you on that 100%. We're at this point now, but you can open up your garage door from your cell phone. What are we waiting on?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I do agree with you. I do think they need, you know, technology is something that they need to invest in, because you are seeing a lot of other sports start to adopt it. I mean, tennis has had, you know, the ability to spot whether or not the ball is in or out for well over a decade now. And it's worked really good. So,
and the analytics is getting so big, even in the NFL.
Right.
I don't know if you watch it in the Olympics.
Yeah, yeah, I've been watching the Olympics.
Like these swimmers and stuff. Like they had this guy from Virginia that's like one of the math teachers, like viewing the swimming and how you can like shave time off by your turn and stuff like that. Like that's how advanced things have gotten to, where that little thing, like not just jumping in the pool anymore and swimming, it's doing things technically.
I've got the Olympics on right now, and there's like a volleyball game between Poland and Brazil. And they literally just kind of did the same thing with tennis, where they tested or not whether or not a ball was in or out, and they use satellite, they use that digital technology to see that the ball was on the line, it was in. So the I think it was Poland that scored there. So like that type of stuff is really good, I think, for sports, because you're able to get more accurate calls, which I think makes the game feel more legitimate.
Have you been watching the Olympics?
Oh yeah.
I have too.
Yeah, I've had like the Gold Zone on every day while I'm working, and yeah, I've been checking them out.
I've been flipped
really
on at like 4 a.m. in the morning because it's live at that point.
Yeah,
like,
by the time you're watching
prime time, it's done. Who's the winner?
Well, yeah, because I watched during the day. I don't know if you watched that rugby sevens. That stuff was really good.
Did you see that female rugby player that was just Derrick Henry and everybody?
Awesome. I watched all the men and women. Man, that stuff looks really fun. I'd be cool if like I know we have a rugby league, but I don't think it's sevens. I think it's like the full like whatever is 15 or whatever on the field. But yeah, I'd like to see a rugby sevens league. I think that'd be a lot of fun.
Well, they're talking about making several pro rugby leagues at this point because of the popularity of it.
Yeah, no, in the Olympics. It's really cool. Like seriously, like rugby sevens to me has been the most fun thing that they've had thus far.
Then you're a loose LRZ fan, man.
Yeah, I mean, he played the regular rugby.
Yeah, he played regular rugby.
But yeah, like I want to see them. I want to see this more on TV. I know like FS1 and FS2 will show rugby on there, but I'd like to see it more. I think on other networks.
My problem is too, if I don't watch it live, which I do try to catch it live as much as I can, because then when you watch that Olympics in primetime, you know, with Tirico at night, they're showing the highlights and they'll show if we won gold or something. But it's so hard. Anywhere, like even the local news will say, turn your head or whatever, we're going to show the winners of the day, but yet they're still talking about it, so you got to change the channel basically or just close your ears.
I don't really care about
cell phone, I get updates all the time from like Yahoo or stuff like this, like Katie Ledecky just won the gold today, you know, in the 1200, you know, it's like there's no suspense in that.
I don't think that matters.
I knew the women's gymnastics team had already won well before, but that was still fine watching because you knew what the outcome was going
to
be.
I had it on live yesterday, and then I watched it again in prime time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was cool. I mean, like I said, I think like LA is going to be cool because it's going to be going on. Like there's going to be a lot of events in prime time here, and
100%.
Like, that stuff's going to be really cool to watch. But yeah, no, I'm perfectly fine with the format as it is. They're 7 hours ahead of us, so it is what it is. But yeah, I've been on it big time, and yeah, I've enjoyed the basketball. I've enjoyed the rugby. The boxing's been not quite as good as I was hoping for. A lot of these guys don't look like they want to fight, but I really enjoy what we've seen from the Olympics.
Have you watched any of the fencing?
Fencing is boring.
They do a lot of stories on the fencing. It's kind of taking over the curling.
Curling. Curling is boring too.
Well, I know with curling in the winter, they're kind of making fencing being kind of like that.
Yep.
I'll watch it though. It's like
fencing's not. I tried watching it, man. It's boring.
You like the equestrian to me. That's
the dressage.
That's
stuff,
really, really boring.
Nah, it's boring.
The horses
though.
Jumping over.
Yeah, they're like prancing around. I'm good on
do
that.
Do you know those horses had to have a passport, honestly?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, because
you need a passport for a horse.
You gotta be careful. Maybe they got some diseases they don't want introduced over in Europe. I get it.
Yeah, but we're talking about a country that they weren't able to do the triathlon for 2 days because that river had crap in it again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it's like there's some stuff is hit or miss. I'm glad that they're getting their shine. I'm glad the fencers are getting their shine on national TV. Not interested in fencing. Like, just it doesn't do it for me. Like, it'd be different if they were like really trying to, you know, like really trying to mess each other up a little bit or something like boxing. But yeah, no, it doesn't do it for me. Like the Taekwondo, I don't know if you've watched that.
Yep.
Taekwondo doesn't do
it
for me.
It's on a bunch of channels. It's USA Network has a bunch of the stuff
too. Yeah, that's what I have it on USA right now, and they're showing that volleyball game. But I mean, yeah, by far rugby, basketball, Boxing generally is really good, but this year, some of the fights have been bad.
Boxing has driven me nuts through the years, though, the scoring on it.
Yeah.
Like when De La Hoya didn't win the gold and when he showed up or something.
Right, yeah.
When that Oscar didn't win, he won the silver. So am I thinking about the right guy? When the Oscar De La Hoya got screwed by like the judges?
Possibly, yeah. I can't remember.
I can't remember exactly, but you know, the swimming's been fun.
Yeah, I've had the swimming on a little bit.
Now, I don't like the 800 or 1200. Yeah. The 100 I do because they go up and they go back.
Another one I've liked is the handball. Handball is cool. Yeah. It's a lot more physical than I remember it being from the other times I've watched it on TV. Yeah, they're especially the ladies. The ladies were out there. They were getting it over there in handball. They were tossing each other to the ground. They were sliding. I didn't know they did cards like they do in soccer, but they do. And so a chick got like a red card because she slid into somebody's legs. Like, oh, they go hard in the paint in handball. I did not know it was like that over there, but that stuff is pretty cool. That's been good to watch, too.
No, I enjoy watching it. To be honest with you, I got enamored the other day by something I never thought I would because it was on. I was like, you know, I don't watch it. It was early in the morning. I watch mountain biking. It was women's mountain biking, man. And it was crazy, kind of the rocks they were having to go down and stuff. Like, somebody had a flat tire that was in the lead the whole time. But I just got hooked on watching this mountain biking thing. And I was like, I never thought I would. And all of a sudden I'm sitting there.
Yeah, the extreme sports can be pretty cool. Like I'll check out like the skateboarding. Because like every year, usually like the Summer X Games, I'll check them out.
And I enjoy the snowboarding a lot too.
Yeah, the snowboarding's cool too when they do the Winter X Games. But yeah, like I mainly like skateboard, snowboard if I'm going to do like the extreme sports. Like
track and field's not started yet. That's obviously a must-watch. I love track and field.
Yeah, I will be watching the
track and field and then the bobsled. Bobsled in the Olympic or the winter. I got to watch those, man.
I don't really care about the bobsled, but yeah, track and field.
I love the bobsled.
Oh, I'm going to be all over track and field when they do it. Cause yeah, there's, I don't know if you watch that sprint series on Netflix, but it's kind of like a reality, kind of like what quarterback or receiver is, but this is for the sprinters, the runners in the Olympics. And it's got like Noah Lyles who, you know, is right now, I think is the record holder for this year for like the 100 and 200. He's going to be racing in those. You got Sha'Carri Richardson who's going to be running.
Nielsen from Park Hill in the pole vault.
Yeah.
Which that sport is insane.
Yeah, it's tough. So like there's a lot of good, interesting personalities there. That's going to be like prime time stuff right there when they do run. So,
well, the text line brings up surfing. They're doing that down in Tahiti. That's actually really Tahiti. Cool.
Surfing's really cool too. Yeah, I like that.
And the guy reporting on it has the shorts on, the jacket, his shorts on as well.
Yeah, he just looks like a dude. They just found out the streets. Hey, report on this.
Yeah, they're having a ton of fun down in Tahiti.
Yeah.
Wonder if all the athletes are doing it like they've done in the past.
Oh, they're chilling. They're having a good time out there.
We're way, way, way past break. Coming up next, though, J.J. Pecola. More of the things he said to Cody and Gold earlier today.
You're listening to After Hours with Dusty Likens on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app. Brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views.
Well, Chris, we got the real college football season starting the 24th of August. It's right around the corner. How much time have you logged on College Football 25?
I don't know. I finished my first season in Dynasty, so I'm kind of working on Florida. So, yeah, I mean, I lost in the national championship game.
How'd Graham Mertz do?
I benched him.
Did you?
Yeah, I benched him.
You win.
DJ Lagway.
Early in the season?
Yeah, the beginning of the season. I was like, I need a quarterback that got some wheels on him, and Mertz ain't going to work. So I benched him for Lagway at the beginning of the year. He's been good. He was good for me as a true freshman. And, it ended up working out. I mean, my team really wasn't that good, especially the offensive line. But hey, you know, I finished second, number two overall, number two in the season. I lost to Oregon in the title game, but the beginning of the season I played Oregon.
Surprised you didn't hit reset.
No, I'm not doing that. No, I don't do that. But then, yeah, I played Oregon at the beginning of my second season, and I beat the hell out of them. So
were you undefeated going into that?
No. I was three losses.
Did you like the new playoff system?
I love it. I think it's great. I think it makes it better because, I think it's going to create more parity because I think – not all these guys are going to go play for the same schools because they're going to have more opportunities to go to the playoff with other teams. But also it's good just because I think it creates more suspense for those games. Like, now we're going to get more meaningful games played later in the season, because if you're sitting there at number 8 and you're probably not going to win your conference, you can still get into the college football playoff and make a run. And I think that makes it more interesting because we're not going to see the same 3 teams winning the championship every year.
Which is funny because their biggest fear all along was we want to make the regular season more meaningful. Now you're getting greater matchups because it doesn't matter if you can drop a game.
Before, I think that was BS.
But I know, but before, if you lose a game, I mean, you know, midway through the season, that could cost you the playoff run.
Right. I think that was BS, though, because it was really the teams at the very top not wanting to lose their ability to stay on top because they don't have to play a bunch of teams to get to the national championship game. I mean, during the BCS system, you just had to be one of the top 2 teams. So if you were already one of the top 2 teams and you just kept winning games, you were fine. You could play an easy schedule. But as long as you beat like a 2 or 3 good teams and everyone believed you were one of the 2 best teams, you were going to get in. And even during this college football playoff system, like, it was never a system based on merit. It was who we think are the best teams. And now I think you're going to see some merit in there because you're going to see, I mean, obviously, like, the bottom 8 teams are going to be picked based on who the committee thinks are the 8 best, but the top 4 are going to be your conference winners.
Yeah, and so it was going to be maybe the Liberty or something sneaking into it. That's originally how it was written.
Right.
But they're getting
right.
that part out of it. But
yeah.
We're only about a year from it being they're going to scrap this 12 and they're going to 16.
Yeah,
we know that,
which is great. I think that's great.
It's what they should have done this year.
They should have done this year. I mean, you were like back in 2014 when they first instituted the playoff. I was advocating for 12 or 16 because I thought that made the sport better. That makes it better, and you get rid of some of those meaningless bowl games that nobody really watches anyway. So I think there's more meaningful college football games now with this current system than there were when there were only 4 teams. And as long as you won your conference, you know, and you had a good chance of getting into the college football playoff, unless you had like 2 juggernauts at the top of like the Big Ten and the SEC, and then the team that was the loser of that conference would get in over you.
Here's what we got on the 24th, the Florida State and Georgia Tech, Montana State, New Mexico, SMU and Nevada, Delaware State and Hawaii. And then on the 29th, of course, you've got a lot more teams in action at that point. I can't wait, man. I can't wait for the college football season. I do think it's going to be fun with North Dakota State playing Colorado early on the 29th. Surely Colorado doesn't lose to North Dakota State.
That would be embarrassing for them.
And you see they're putting their social media handles on the back of their workout jerseys in training camp. It says like at whoever. I mean, come on, man.
I think I get it. I 100% understand where Dion and them is coming from, trying to market the team. He's a great marketer. He was great when he was a player. But sports is a meritocracy. And if you don't live up to the hype, you fall down real quick. And I think this is a make or break year for him because, you know, he coached at Jackson State, you know, HBCU, did, you know, great work there. He kind of dipped on him in a way that looked weak because he spent the whole time talking about how he was going to uplift the university, and then he just dips and they fall right back to where they were.
And takes Travis Hunter with him.
Yeah, he takes all their best players. As I said, he took all their best players with him in the first place, so he basically put them right back where they were. He goes to Colorado, hypes himself up. Media hype played a part in that too, but he was complicit as well. And he didn't have a good season there. I know they won 3 more games than they won the year before, but they only won 1 game the year before.
Well, the TCU game gave him a lot of street cred, and TCU wasn't a good team. But TCU
was
going into it.
Yeah, TCU was overrated. So we gave him way too much credit for TCU being an overrated, which I think we both thought going into that game, TCU was on upset alert because they lost a lot of good players.
Gave him a signing bonus to come to the conference.
Right, yeah.
And then you have Schnur saying they're everybody's Super Bowl. No, you're everybody's homecoming game, man.
No, yeah. It's like, yeah, no, you're not everyone's Super Bowl.
Prove yourself first.
Exactly. So I do kind of worry about Colorado this year because Shedeur Sanders is probably going to leave at the end of the year. Travis Hunter's, I think for sure, is going to leave at the end of the year. And Colorado's not killing it in recruiting right now. So it's like, what are you doing? What are you going to do next year? Like, this year, I think, is going to be very, very big for that Colorado
program. They have to worry about capitalizing going forward if Deion leaves.
Yes. Yeah, and that's the thing is, like, if you're Deion, you're kind of hoping.
Not that he's winning national titles or even coming close to winning games, but
yeah,
you're going to be hurting.
But if you're Deion, you're kind of hoping that, like, you have a great year this year and you can parlay that into a different job. Because I don't think you're going to be recruiting super great at Colorado anytime soon.
It's fun, them being the Big 12. I just can't wait for college football season. It's going to be
very exciting.
It's going to be a ton of fun. Didn't get to it. We'll get to it because we went late with that Olympics talk. But what J.J. Pecola said next.
You're listening to After Hours with Dusty Likens on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app. Brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views.
Have you seen all those Dylan Raiola stuff? From Nebraska, how he went in looking like Mahomes.
Yeah, I did see that.
Well, he's always patterned his game. He worked out, I guess, with Mahomes anyway, and he patterns his game after him. Even James Palmer on Twitter was talking about it because he wears 15 like Mahomes, right? He's like, he wants to be Mahomes bad. And he's the number one quarterback in the country, according to some sources.
I've never heard anyone say that Dylan Raiola is the number one quarterback in the country.
But he was once committed to Georgia.
I don't care. I've never heard anyone say that.
You never heard that? Well, he's been considered top 10 with some.
No, I've not heard him being a number one quarterback.
Really?
No. I've heard Carson Beck. I've heard maybe Quinn Ewers or Shedeur Sanders.
Well, 247 Sports had him as a five-star prospect.
Are you talking about in his recruiting class? Are you talking about draft?
Quarterback, they listed him as number two.
If you're talking
about... No, he's a true freshman.
Okay, so I thought you were talking about...
recruiting stuff.
I thought you were talking about draft.
He was the one walking into camp in Nebraska looking just like Mahomes.
I saw him. I didn't know he was... I thought you were talking about... the draft.
No, it'll be a couple years before we talk about
that. I was about to say, I was like,
a few years before we talk about that.
Like, I've not heard anything about him in the draft. Not one single thing.
Well, he's a true freshman, so it's going to be 3 years. So we have to wait.
I was about to say.
We have to wait on that. Speaking of the Kansas City Royals and swept the White Sox today, the terrible team known as the Chicago White Sox, 27 wins on the road. But the trade deadline came and went yesterday, and the Royals addressed a lot of their needs. Not only that, kind of turned a lot of heads, including at MLB Network with DeRosa and with Dan O'Dowd.
So a deeper dive into this Royals team. This was a team that was busy in the offseason. And, Dewar, you've talked a lot about this, how they didn't have to go out and get the veteran arms in the offseason, but they did, and you were hoping they would continue this into the deadline.
Lauren, I think every team to a certain degree should honor the best players in the world and approach the offseason, the way the Kansas City Royals approach the offseason. We're falling into a trap in today's game where you either have your aircraft carriers and then a bunch of guys making the minimum. And that middleman is getting phased out of the game, right? If you're not a star by the time you're 30 years old, when most guys make it to free agency, it's hard to get. They identified better than organizational type players that they could bring in that could kind of augment the young firepower that they had coming and build a chemistry and a good team. The Hunter Renfros, the Seth Lugos, the Michael Wacas. Yeah. I'm probably missing one or two other guys, and they're doing the same thing at the deadline. They're honoring the fact that they have a legit shot at this.
Yeah, driving into the yard for a five-game
Hunter Harvey is not on that board either, so they added two power arms. The Young will probably become their third baseman, and they got a quality starter that's going to eat innings for them. That helps them with the innings totals that the other guys are getting at this point in time. J.J. Pecola has done a great job there.
I'd love to see the Royals in the postseason. I'd love to see that fan base get excited.
So there's MLB Network on the trade deadline and the Kansas City Royals giving a lot of their credit that they're due. J.J. Pecola, you can check out the full interview, 610sports.com, joined Cody and Gold today. And J.J. kind of told them how the whole trade process went down.
Yeah, well, there's certainly one move does impact other moves, and simply in acquisition cost and prospect value that's given up. There were some deals that were made that there was a lot of prospect value that was given up, and that drove up the price on some other guys. And, you know, as an organization, you have to make a choice at that point. you know, how far are you willing to go? And, you know, that's the balance. We're getting a chance to today look back through all the deals, and there's going to be some deals we're going to like think, you know, that was a smart trade. They didn't give up a ton, but they got exactly what they needed. And there's going to be some we're going to probably say, yeah, we probably wouldn't have gone there. So every deal does have an impact on the next one for sure.
JJ also talked about not sacrificing the future, which I think is really like, and I know the Royals gave up some prospects and things like that, but their farm system's not the best in the world at this point, but they have players to help them. Now, what you do is you push all in for the Kansas City Royals, but you don't want to sacrifice the future.
Well, if you take a look at our projected roster for next year, you know, even taking like performance out of it completely, we're going to lose more guys out of our bullpen than we are anywhere else. So that was certainly a need, not only for this season, but moving forward. So trying to acquire pitchers, relief pitchers that had years of control was high on our list. And, you know, both Harvey and Ursig both represent that, Harvey through next year and Ursig through 29. So we were able to accomplish that. And, sending a message, you don't want to make moves just to make moves. You want to make moves that make sense. You want to make moves that improve your club. But this team has earned the right for us to go out and get other players. They've done the work on the field. They've played extremely well, and we wanted to help them to continue play well. And then also even just our fan base. I mean, our fans are excited right now about what our team's doing. We have really good evaluators and really good ways of just evaluating our team. How could we make this team better so our fans continue to enjoy what's going on this year? So it was necessary for us to make moves. But again, it wasn't going to be moves just to make moves. They were going to be moves that would make sense for us in 24 and make sense for us moving forward.
And you get to see Lucas Ursig that they made that trade with Oakland A's for, hit nearly 100 miles an hour today. What's going to happen with the Royals and these pieces going forward? It's go time for this team. No more White Sox. They went 12-1 against. All right, they've already knocked out the booty call White Sox. So we'll see which direction they're going. Talk about the Kansas City Royals and where they go from here and who steps up next.
You're listening to After Hours with Dusty Likens on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app. Brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views.
Well, Chiefs wrapped up their ninth day of practice and training camp today. The Kansas City Royals ended up sweeping the Chicago White Sox, which you probably expected. I think they expected that.
I don't think you ever expect a sweep in baseball.
You do against the White Sox.
No,
I'm pretty sure we could field the team here to beat them.
No, you don't. Like, this is still a professional baseball team, and you don't see sweeps that often.
So I would love to see 3 or 4 against Detroit, not going to lie.
Yeah, I'd like to see that too. I like to see that
too. And then you got Boston at home, which is incredibly important because they're the team 2.5 games behind the Royals in the wild card.
Right, yeah, that's a great one for building some distance, yeah.
That's a huge one just to kind of stiff arm them, put them away. But the Royals, 4 in Detroit coming up, then 3 against Boston at home, 2 against St. Louis at home before another important series, well, 2 important series on the road with at Minnesota for 3 and at Cleveland for 3. It doesn't get any much bigger than that, than having those two teams back-to-back. Then you got the Angels squeezed in there. Again, the Royals lost 2 of 3 to the Cubs. They lost 2 of 3 to the Diamondbacks. So you got to be careful what you wish for sometimes. But there's important wild card games coming up. You know, like the 29th of August, you got Houston for 4 down in Houston. You got Philadelphia squeezed in there 23rd of August through the 25th. It's going to be home, but Philadelphia is a good team as well. I'm looking forward to it because I'm looking to see what Bobby Witt Jr. will do. How about Vinny Pasquantino? He's been hitting well. Hunter Renfro has looked completely different. I love the fact the way that Hunter Renfro is playing. As a matter of fact, you know, they didn't replace him. You think, well, okay, because Paul DeYoung's going to play in several different directions. But Hunter Renfro, even J.J. Piccolo talking about Hunter today.
Yeah, no, we're very comfortable with what Hunter's doing. He was, got off to a slow start. And, you know, now is I think he's got over an 800 OPS since the middle of May. So he's producing at a very high level. Obviously, he's moved up in the lineup now, hitting 5 and 6 and getting some big hits for us. So it did make it easier. Hunter is going to be on our team one way or the other. But the fact that he's producing took a lot of pressure off of us to go try to find a super impactful bat. We're able to add a piece in DeJong that can help us in a lot of different ways because Hunter is going to be in the lineup, just about every day.
I like these pieces. I really like Lucas Sersig, you know, in their bullpen. Lorenzen, I think, is going to be a nice starter for this team. They sent Alec Marsh back down to AAA. Bubich, his development in the bullpen, in which direction we're going to see. Sam Long, if he can keep things together, looked good the other night. You know, this bullpen, hey, sky's the limit for this team. I like the young coming in, playing some third base for you, coming in as a bat that you can bring in various times. Does have 18 home runs this year. I'm excited for the rest of the season with this team. And usually you like flip the page to the local college football, which obviously we're going to do. And then the Chiefs in September, but man, the Royals, they're going to have a nice little press towards the end for that third wild card spot or second, or who knows if Cleveland loses a whole bunch and the Royals get hot and win some games. The fact is, the problem is Cleveland keeps winning when the Royals do.
I mean, they're a good team. So right now the Royals are in a position where they just got to keep stacking wins. And it would have been nice for them to, you know, go win the series against the Diamondbacks, or
which they're fighting for playoffs too.
Right? So. Yeah, like it would have been nice for them to do that and against the Cubs and whatnot. But hey, you know, good teams. It's hard to always constantly win games like that, win series like that. But this is going to be an important stretch run for the Royals, and I think the trades make them better. I think you addressed your biggest weakness, which was your bullpen, and I think you got it a little decent little pop. He's got, you know, DeJong's got 18 home runs on the year, so.
And he's had his experience, 14 postseason games.
So, like, it's good that you've got that on your team. I'm perfectly fine with where they're at. I mean, at this point now, it's just like, okay, we need some of these other guys to step. We need Mikel to step up and show what he can do. Massey to step up and show what he can do. And you get that, and you get some contribution from like DeJong and whatnot, I think you're feeling pretty good about where you are.
You know how much fun we're getting this fall? With the best local football we've probably seen in our lifetime, plus the Royals playoffs, and Chiefs.
If the Royals make the playoffs, it's going to be a really, really strong fall for Kansas City sports.
Yeah. Truman Sports Complex. It's going to see some cars, see some people. I'm excited about it, man.
There's going to be a lot going on here in the fall. I think it's going to be a really big time.
The stretch right now, because we're in August tomorrow, right? Today's July 31st.
Yes,
August tomorrow.
Tomorrow's August 1st.
There we go. That was a fast month, man. July just went.
Yeah, it usually does. I kind of feel like it usually does.
Oh, man. Usually it's stalled during All-Star break and All-Star week. And
yeah,
all that.
But like after that, it goes pretty quick training camp starts.
It's on, man. We got a preseason game against the Jags on August 10th. Great stuff from you, Uno Cero. Make sure you go download our Character Concerns podcast. We'll give you updates on the rookies and first-year players for the Kansas City.
We appreciate it, guys.
Yeah, we do appreciate it. We put that out every Tuesday. So, and we'll talk to you soon, I guess. Good night, Chris. Good night, people.
Yeah. Good night, guys.